Okay. The Gene Harris and Scott Hamilton Quintet with Blues for Gene is from their 1990 album, At Last. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and good to be back with you again after a very curious weekend with news developments that would make you want to shake your head, say, what the heck are these people thinking? Or is there something wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with you. But there is something wrong with a system that does one thing and tells us it's the other, something other than what we are seeing and experiencing. And so we always have to recalibrate and remind ourselves that this is what politics is all about. You have to develop a keen sense of self-defense, and you always have to remind yourself to have faith in what you are seeing and experiencing. Have faith in your judgment. Because 9 out of 10 times, you're absolutely correct. Except everybody and everything is telling you you're not nearly as smart as the smart people. You don't have the pedigree to believe that what you are seeing and experiencing is real. What is real is what they tell you. And that is where you are to hang your hat and put 100% faith in the craziness that they're telling you. So, this is so evident in what is happening now. The Democrats are having a little problem trying to explain what accounts for the inertia around this movement. Everybody would have expected by now that there would be significant movement on this effort to impeach President Donald Trump for all kinds of reasons, of which many have been annotated. But we can't seem to convince Vince Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, that this is important. It's important to pay attention to and to respond to this increasing demand to impeach Donald Trump. She has her own way of seeing it, and I can appreciate that. I don't want to be accused of dismissing the vast experience of a Nancy Pelosi in politics. But I'm looking at the nature of the relationship between political leadership and the people. And I'm seeing an attitude I don't care for. I don't like what the people are getting. I don't like the high-handed attitude that they couldn't possibly know what they're talking about. They couldn't possibly have a comprehensive understanding of why they're feeling the way they're feeling. They're not as tutored in the fine art of politics as the leadership is of the Democratic Party. The leadership knows infinitely more than the average person. The average person, well, they may have an opinion, but it is not a learned opinion. It's not an expert opinion. We value their opinions, of course, the leadership would say. But we're looking at the evidence. There isn't much movement. And whatever movement that we have seen from the party is not very encouraging, nor is it respectful of the people's concern. The general attitude is hurry up and wait. We know intuitively when it's the right time, or even there will be a right time. We'll take care of that. What you, the people, need to do is to be available to do exactly what we tell you to do. We're coming to that point. It may not be visible yet, but we actually are doing things. And these things will lead to the grand decision. And we have a couple of bridges to cross yet before we get to the decision. But we'll tell you. We'll tell you not only when we have made a decision, but what the decision is, and further, what we will require of you to support our decision. See? Now, that's how politics works. In the meantime, we're not paying attention to a damn thing you're thinking about. We have our own problems. But this has been our life. We've been politicians for decades. And you ought to trust that we know what we're doing. We appreciate your input as long as you know when to end it. But in the meantime, rest easy because we are dealing with the issue. We are dealing with the problem. Well, the late Dr. Eric Williams of Trinidad and Tobago had written a treatise called Massa Day Dead, or Massa Day Done, meaning that whether they choose to recognize it, whether they approve of it or not, the power equation is shifting, and in some cases already has changed. People are taking on leadership in ways that the party as a whole, the party structure, and the entire industry of politics, they're scared that the people would have too much power, too much influence. They're not waiting for permission. They're not receiving well the rules that we're setting down and the vision that we have, you know, having had wonderful talks behind closed doors. What is wrong? Things have gotten out of hand. They don't understand their relationship with the power elite and what they're supposed to do. So they have a problem. In this case, in the matter of possible impeachment of the president, we are constantly told about how difficult it is. It's a very difficult thing. A very emotional process, because in the end, it will necessitate a break within the body politic. It will cause fractionating this incredible body that they have created that is miles ahead of where the party was in terms of leadership decades ago. We're told about what a gut-wrenching proposition it is In other words, we're being given a steady diet of messages that say, don't do it. Let's not do it. We're not ready to impeach a president. And if we try to do something that monumental, we stand a good chance of failing. We will fail. And then would come the compounding of the problems that we are likely to suffer. First of all, we have a Republican Party that has been organizing and raising money and getting itself in gear and is behind the president. And we don't need to tempt fate. And now say we're taking on the president. No, no, no. We must think very carefully about this, as if this is actually advice. It's not advice. It is an expression of fear. Except that we, the people, don't know what this fear is about. What could be so intimidating? I'm not trying to make fun or trying to diminish the significance of a move like this. This is a big move. This is an awesome move. But it has been done before. There are rules, there are guidebooks on how to do it and do it successfully. So what is this incredible groundswell that we are supposed to pay attention more to the fact of how fearsome such a project would be, how daunting it would be, i.e. how impossible it would be to impeach a president? Well, I have a different theory, because you see, this is how I study politics. And it is almost always, it starts in the realm of human behavior. What is happening within the Democratic Party, and especially within its leadership, that is engendering such fear and hesitation, especially at a time when there's documentation of a rise in the dissatisfaction of the electorate with the leadership of the United States right now? They want it to go away. And it seems the more that the people are expressing a desire to get rid of this administration, the more pronounced the message that we really need to consider what we're doing. Well, that's a silly, silly piece of advice. Nobody is suggesting that this is a piece of cake. Everybody understands what the stakes are. And still, they want this president gone. And they want the Democratic Party to put his lights out. Get rid of the pests that we've had to live with already for 2 years. So I come back to the question, based entirely on human nature. What could possibly be the reason, I ask myself, what could be the reason for what seems to be an illogical position? You are the opposition party, are you not? You should be jumping for joy that people are coming to the conclusion that this administration is not what they bargained for. This administration is not ruling the country well. This president has monumental problems and causing every single day a new batch of monumental problems. So what would be the reason that an opposition party would be reluctant to capitalize on that kind of energy? What would be the reason? And that's where we start our discussion today. I'm asking you, what is the reason for Nancy Pelosi's reluctance to engage in battle? I have several good ideas as to why she's reluctant, but I'm asking you, because after all, you are the people who count. What could possibly be the reason that precisely at a time you're getting a groundswell of support on the basis of an expected challenge to the president via a move to remove him? Precisely at that time, your leadership is showing all the signs that that's not where we want to go. That's not what we want to do. Would you say it's a good question? I think it's an excellent question. It's a simple question. It's a very straightforward question. It doesn't have any, you know, bells and whistles attached to it. There's no frou-frou attached to this question. It's a straightforward question. So why can't we answer that? Let's try today to answer that very simple question. Why is it that precisely at a time that you're getting a groundswell and it's palpable and people appear to be backing the idea of moving against Donald Trump via impeachment, not, you know, protests in the streets and all of that, but impeachment. Your leader is saying no. And beyond saying no, appears to be sidelining the process, appears to be giving the exact opposite in the way of signals that she doesn't quite understand and she doesn't quite support popular opinion. 888-874-4888. That's the first question today that we're tackling. And you're going to tell us, what do you think is happening, likely happening? What do you think is going on to account for this unexplained rift? One side is contradicting the other. I think it's a very important question to ask, and especially at this time. Nate from California, you get us started today.
Yes, hi, Yatrice. It's good afternoon. Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay, Nate. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, I think that the answer to the question that you asked about why the Democrats will not prosecute a impeachment of Donald Trump is because they appear to be opposition parties, but in reality, are they really opposition parties? And do they want to invest the capital to go through this to make, maybe they don't want to perform all the theater that would ensue if they were to go through impeachment.
Okay, but dig a little deeper. Go ahead.
And the elections are coming up. How would it affect, would the Republicans become more, I don't know, more evil? would the Democrats have to finally fight for their survival? And would they have to really come out as being an opposition party?
Okay.
It's like you know, we hear that it's Kabuki theater. These two parties appear to be opposition parties, but they're not. They're just there taking up space, pretending to be looking out for the interests of the American people. And in reality, they're just there to do what the rich hire them for. We vote, and like you say, we go away. They tell us to go away, and then they do what the wealthy want them to do. We're just voters. We're not really constituents, and they hold us with contempt.
All right. You're on a good path, but I'm waiting for you to ring that bell. What is the bell that I'm waiting for you to ring?
I'm not quite sure.
Give it a try. I'm sure you know the answer. But because we haven't asked ourselves yet, let's take some time and think about this. Think about it just one more time, and let's see where you go.
Oh, okay. The only thing that I have at such a short notice and such pressure on the phone.
Short notice. All right, I take that.
Is that, and I'll let some other people come in, is that they might really have to put a lot of energy into being what they're supposed to be. But, you know, it's like you and I and the PRN audience, we know that they're just putting on a facade for the world. They're supposed to be a power structure. They're supposed to know this. They're supposed to be at the helm of the country. But like you say, they don't really know, or know, they may know even less than the common people of America know.
Uh-huh. Well, you gave it a good try. I don't expect
you.
That we will get the answer today. I'm just trying to encourage people to embark on this adventure of finding an answer.
It's
and
wonderful.
We will get
I love
there.
It.
Thanks, Nate. You got us started in fine style. Thank you. Marie from New York, you're on the air.
Hello.
What is your answer? Hello, Marie.
Well, my name is Lee. I feel that if they go through with impeachment, that the Republicans will show up an awful lot of high-powered Democrats for what they really are. And I think there's fear there.
Okay.
You see, the Republicans don't play games. They don't care who you are.
What is it that you think we will learn that would be
terrifying? And I think the Democrats will have a lot to lose. I think that's what Nancy's so-called Pelosi's fear is.
What do you think we are likely to find?
Well, I think they'll find out an awful lot of things that have gone on that we should know about, that have not been brought forth to us. But by the same token, I feel that we're going to find out a whole lot about Clinton and Obama that we should have known, but that was swept under the rug. It'll be house cleaning time, and I think we'll be good. But Nancy ain't got those kind of balls.
Well, you know what? Here's a very interesting thing. You just hit on the answer. I strongly suspect that the Democratic Party, as represented by Nancy Pelosi, they do not want to engage in a real fight with the Trump camp, because the Trump camp has very easy way of fighting back. And that involves bringing the light to shine on the Clintons and even Barack Obama. Highly irregular things occurred in these two administrations that they cannot defend and they cannot excuse. You are absolutely right. And that's why they're trying their best to, I mean, if this problem could get up and walk out of the room and never be seen again, they'll be happy. And that's the reason for all of this dilly-dallying and, you know, trying to thwart any brisk movement, because they know they're vulnerable. The Democrats are absolutely vulnerable. How are you going to defend the Clintons? Because it will be raised. It is the perfect parallel to what's going on now. How is a Democratic Party going to defend its support, its slavish support of the Clintons and the policies that were enacted during Bill Clinton's tenancy as President of the United States? And as you know, we've been talking about it here and exposing some of the things that happened, but Charles Ortel, who has been doing some serious investigation, which continues, has categorized it as the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history. Then he has as his companion in life Hillary Clinton, and she comes with more baggage than John F. Kennedy Airport processes in a day. She has more baggage than that, and still has it, and still is being propped up by the Democratic Party. We have, for example, the policy of enlarging exponentially mass incarceration. You have the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. And it goes on and on. Between Hillary and Bill, there is no end of ammunition that the Republicans will have. And the Democrats know it. So their tactic is to dismiss the validity of such an action, impeachment against Donald Trump, and hope that the problem by itself will just get up and go away. It's not going to go away. So you win the prize, Marie, for bringing us smack dab up against why there is a marked reluctance to engage in battle. They don't have anything to engage with. And now they will have to explain how it was possible that the party itself put itself at the disposal of the Clintons, the corrupt Clintons, the thieving Clintons. And they will have to explain 8 years at least of total denial of what was going on in a Democratic administration. They can't argue that point. So the best thing to do is to try and dissuade people and tell them, look, he's not even worth indicting. It's not worth impeachment. That's the tact that they're taking. But of course, we know there's going to be a deeper investigation. And here's what's even more important. The investigations now that the Clintons will have to answer for, as well as Obama, these are going to be charges occurring not in the United States, but they're being generated outside of the United States, where they have zero control. It's going to be a big thing. I'm delighted. I'm delighted, Marie, that you have brought us to this point today. I thank you so much.
You're welcome.
But observe it. And you did such a splendid job. Just observe the conduct of Pelosi and others versus the aspirations of regular voters. This is what we want. But we've been wanting a close review for quite some time. We never got it. And now that an opportunity exists, a legitimate opportunity exists to accomplish two things: to fight against Trump and to own up to the sins of the Democratic Party for the last 8 years and more. That's not what they want. And we are already being targeted psychologically to accept, at least from the Pelosi point of view, that, well, look, this is not a fight worth fighting. It is very much worth fighting. They just don't want to engage. Thank you. I hope I see you on the 27th. Is it the 27th? I hope so. I hope we see each other at the talk I'm giving this coming Saturday. I really hope so. But thanks for calling in. Bill from Brooklyn, what are your thoughts?
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and to all of the listeners out there
Thank
all
you.
Over the world. Yes, this morning I heard Representative Al Green on one of the stations, I think it was Democracy Now!, talking about why the Constitution compels impeachment and laying out that Trump, of course, really doesn't want to be impeached. And all of his bluster and threats about, you know, I dare you to impeach me, he's quaking in his boots. And yes, I think you're right in terms of there's a lot of dirt on the Republicans as well as the Democrats as far back as we can, you know, go pretty much. And the boil needs to be let it all out. There needs to be a cleansing and the sky and let the chips fall where they may and move forward. Yes, and actually there's a book called A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment by Barbara Rutnowsky, which sort of lays all of this out in very plain language.
Well, you see, it was staring at us for quite some time. We just refused to recognize it. We engaged in active denial and delusion.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was the only media outlet to run both times Al Green's speech on the floor, where he laid out what he considered to be good articles, sound articles, of impeachment against Trump. And I remarked, I hope you might have remembered that, that after he was finished,
that's right,
you saw nobody go up to him and shake his hand. You didn't see anybody slap him on the back saying, good job. He was standing there alone. I remarked about that because that behavior was the most significant thing. It wasn't only that he laid out articles of impeachment. And to be very fair, it wasn't a spectacular speech. What was spectacular about it was the lack of endorsement among his colleagues and certainly the leadership. He was all alone the first time he did it, and the second update that he came out with, he was by himself. Mm-hmm. The party, in effect, had said, "We have nothing to do with this guy. We have no reason to feel good about him laying out articles of impeachment against the president." So, mm-hmm. you know, collectively they said, "My name is Bennett and I ain't in it."
Everybody's in it now, and it's like in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy and the Tin Man and the rest of them and the dog went and they pulled
the curtain.
saw what was behind the curtain. And so,
but you know what's coming if they follow that yellow brick road. Mm-hmm. We are likely to find truths that we would have great difficulty acknowledging and dealing with.
No doubt about it.
Because, and that is what Nancy Pelosi is trying to do, to delay it as long as possible. Let's not go there. The problem is the Republican president and his Republican administration. And let's just keep it there, you know, until we find a way to quash it all together. Bruce, for your call today. Thank you.
All right.
We'll take a little break and come back to issue number two right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm your Trace Lead. And we're taking a look today at human conduct and behavior, what they are actually confirming about our political process. And hopefully we are paying attention, because we just discovered that we have confirmation that our instincts are good. We have great instincts, but there is quite a distance between what we legitimately feel and we're still doubting that we have legitimacy as political agents. That we need somebody to, we're waiting for somebody to confirm that we are on the right track. So, I want to talk about the fact that we are not seizing the moment as political activists or people who have an identity politically that's very different from the identity they people think we ought to have. We are concerned, we are involved. At least that's what we tell ourselves. And this is the moment for us to develop, to energize ourselves and get involved. Because part of the plan is to contain this fight, if it indeed continues to exist, to contain it as a two-party fight. The Democrats and the Republicans. And those would be the only people who matter. And yet, from a strategic point of view, this is precisely the time that we build grassroots and coalition movements. We should never, ever allow this to be a two-party fight. This is our business too. And we must insist on maintaining a very effective presence in the struggle, in this fight. So why are we sitting, you know, idly by, looking at that old tired dynamic of the Democrats versus the Republicans? Isn't that old? Isn't that tired? Isn't that supposed to be dead? That is not a good working formula. It does not allow progress at all. It doesn't even acknowledge it. But we seem also to be investing heavily in trying to escape involvement, when the exact opposite is the way we ought to be conducting ourselves. Jump in and steal some thunder. Jump in and be part of the fight. You don't leave it up to Democrats and Republicans. We've been doing that for decades. It's an old, tired formula. And I'm asking, where is the leadership, independent, progressive, radical? Where is that leadership that insists on recasting our political reality? They have nothing to contribute. They don't think that we belong in the fight. What is the example that they're setting here by just being absent? Is that the way to go? This is the time to organize. This is the time to engage in education, political education. This is the time to spread word about what it is you stand for. Because before us are two examples of things that haven't worked and haven't been working. It's not like the Democrats have solved problems. It's not like the Republicans have a handle on how to move this country forward. But we are not hearing, because for some reason they're canceling themselves out. And it's the wrong tactic to take, especially at a time like this. The Democrats and Republicans are actually providing fodder for your arguments. So get in the community and fight. Convince people that there are other ways that we can move to great advantage. But we don't know anything. We don't know what is distinguishing, let's say, the Workers' Party at this time from any other progressive group and what their thinking is. It seems as if they don't exist. Am I being harsh? Am I being cruel or excessively critical? Or do you see a merit to the argument that they've got to take advantage of what is happening now? It is literally providing arguments for these parties and a basis for them to come out of their various closets in true and meaningful style, raising questions relevant to people. I don't understand this retreat. I don't get it. They should be raising money. They should be organizing. They should be spreading their philosophy. And they should be actively building or even rebuilding a political base. They should be exploring how they could work together right now. What do you think? 888-874-4888. Bruce, you're on the air. Okay. He's not on the air. Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice.
Hey.
Hi. I feel completely overwhelmed by so many things that are happening in our country that aren't really on the radar as far as politics are concerned, but have huge effects on our society. So I'm preoccupied with those things. And I think that this, I listened to Al Green this morning, and I think that he made some wonderful points, and I agree with them. Nancy Pelosi's reason for not going after Trump and impeaching him is because of the Clintons, then I think that's ridiculous. I understand what you're saying, but it would still be, no matter what Trump says, the Clintons aren't in office right now. He is. So he can retaliate in any way he wants and say whatever he wants, and it all, you know, is perfectly true. But he's still the one who's going to be on trial, not the Clintons. Not this time, not right now. It will bring more of that up to the surface, and it will probably have a big, I think it would have a very cathartic effect on the Democratic Party to start to have to look at this and start to have to deal with this. These rumors have been around for years. These stories have been around for years, and they've all been gingerly walking past them and not paying any attention to it. But for the Democratic Party not to engage in impeaching Trump just because of the Clintons is, to me, really bad practice. It makes what they do in covering up the Clintons three times worse, because we are really at a crossroads here. It is the right time to impeach him. It is close to the end of his presidency. Somebody brought up on NPR this morning, and I thought this was a good point, that if Trump went through the impeachment process right now, it would sort of dovetail with the elections so that we wouldn't have to worry about Pence coming in and being the next president. So the timing actually is good. At least I feel it's good to do an impeachment. And do I think it's important? Yeah, I do think it's important, because for all of the reasons that Al Green raised, I mean, how long are we going to let this stuff go by? There was no collusion. But there is so much corruption. There is so much breaking of the law. And now people are being subpoenaed to come to court that are just saying, I don't feel like it. I'm not going. So I think that this is Trump has to be reined back in. I think he has to be reined back in. And I don't really know that I think it's going to have the catastrophic event on the Democrats, that you're predicting. But if it does, okay, so we go to the next place. I do notice one thing that is a steady stream, is that no matter what station I listen to, I hear no talk about, I hear about all the candidates except for the person who's probably raised more money than anybody, and that's Bernie. I don't hear about him anywhere. So they talk about Camilla, they talk about Joe Biden, but it's like he's invisible again. So the Democrats and the radio stations and the TV stations are doing just like they did the last time. They're ignoring what people want. They decided they're going to make up their mind for us. This time they're throwing Joe Biden at us, telling us that it's going to be Joe Biden, which really means you have more Clinton policies, more middle-of-the-road crap, more ignoring things, and that is exactly what people don't want. People want change, and they want significant change, and we don't have time to wait for it anymore. But I'll tell you something, Utrice. I don't know if I want to hit the streets about the impeachment or about who's going to be the next president in terms of my activism, because I just feel like it's a waste of time. Even in my neighborhood, where, you know, so many people are suffering such poverty, and even where I work, even when I go to work and I see, it's alarming to me what's happening with jobs and how the wages have been lowered and how so many people are being unemployed, and nobody's willing to say anything. It's just like, okay,
well, not yet. They're not willing to say anything yet, but perhaps they're waiting for a trigger moment. Perhaps they're not seeing it yet, and that comes with a groundswell of expressed dissatisfaction, and we're waiting, but we shouldn't just wait. We have to do something.
I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you, but for my limited amount of time, I've tried to educate everyone in front of me about Venezuela, about 5G, about, you know, the Clintons especially. I got myself in so much trouble with the Clintons because when I worked on the Bernie campaign and I wrote a very, very thoughtful letter to a fellow, a couple I know who had worked in my campaign, a black couple who the man had been in prison and had gone through the system, and they knew poverty because they were living it. And I asked him how they could support Hillary Clinton when she was the one that came up with the three strikes you're out, and that almost everyone in our community has somebody sitting in jail because of this horrendous policy. How could they support somebody that said that black children were predators? I mean, and, you know, I was asked to send that letter all over the place, not just to my friend Hosey after other people heard it. They thought it was very profound, and I did. I gave it, I put it in every project in East Harlem. I put it in the projects in New England. I put it in Camden. I went to the neighborhood of Camden, and it came back to bite me so much. I mean, when I ran for office this year, that all the Democratic clubs had decided behind the scenes that I was not allowed to speak at one event, not one event. I had to sit each one out.
You're taking all this personal, and I understand why. I mean, we are human, after all. We don't like the idea of being the brunt of group punishment. But look, this is what politics involves. We got to toughen up, and we. But
yes,
we
but
have
I mean, how much?
Have
you, how much are you going to put yourself out there? I mean, it's not just putting yourself out there. It's just you take such a risk in putting yourself out there. As an activist, you take such a risk. And
but
after a while,
we are not building community of struggle. We're not doing that. We are, you know, like lone wolves doing our own thing over here and in a pocket over there. That is not good strategy. And we will be vanquished every single time.
Yes.
I'm saying that the time has come for us to understand how politics works.
Right.
And we can't apply the same old formula and expect an entirely different result. We have to grow up in the business of activism as well. Right. Don't take these things personally.
So it's interesting. I mean, I agree with you, and I say too with the activism. I mean, I've said this to many of my friends. Like they know how to handle us now as activists. So when you go down and you protest, it doesn't have the effect that it used to have because they discovered how to fizzle out, a whole march. They know how to fizzle it out, and they also know how to make themselves look great while they're doing it. They're saying, look, we're letting you shout at yourself in the mirror until you can't shout anymore, and we're not going to arrest anybody. See, we believe in freedom of speech, and it never goes anywhere. And you're right. We need some new ideas about how we're going to approach activism because the things that worked in the 60s are not working anymore in this era. We need something that's different to take hold, and I don't have that idea yet, but I'm working on it.
Great. And we are grateful that you're doing just that. We all need to copy you and come to entirely different ways of doing things, hoping that, of course, we get entirely different results. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And as we literally just experienced, when we pause for a while and just think, you see how clearly you can see a problem. Never mind what they're telling you. Never mind how they are defining things. You have to trust yourself that you are a thinking person and you have your own interpretation of the world. And essentially what we have to do now is to share this, which is what I'm hoping to accomplish this Sunday at the community church. We just start thinking. We organize groups, and it's all about thinking and sharing what we think, sharing what we feel. All of that is to build community, and we desperately need it. We need new approaches, and we'll get there. I'm optimistic that we will. But I understand also, and we can't deny it, how daunting it is to feel lonely out there, to feel that what we are feeling is unique only to us. Nobody else is thinking this way. That's not true. So come out on Sunday, the 26th of May, at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street, between Park and Madison Avenues. And it starts at 1 o'clock. And we'll just get to talk to each other, meet each other. And it's only going to be for a short period in the afternoon. And we will have begun a process that is long overdue, and that is beginning to know each other and sharing information. I'm looking forward to it. It's free. It's free. So that's a great incentive to show up and bring someone with you. But thank you today for your thoughts and your participation. Thank you for advancing new ideas, which really are old ideas, but they've been unpracticed for so long, they became new again. But to trust yourself, trust that you, what you are observing is a very high form of intelligence, and you ought to embrace it, not be afraid, and to trust again, because each of us has this piece of divinity that we know intuitively that we are on the right track. How we get to do all the other things, I think that's a process of talking to each other. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for your input today. Bye-bye.